Good morning, Southern Maine. You're listening to Tad Smart Talk with Steve-O. You're also listening to News Talk WLOB 1310 AM here on your AM dial. Or if you're listening through the live streaming, you just go to, WLOBradio.com, right, Deb?
That's right.
50,000, 50 million watts.
50 billion watts.
Yeah, we have unlimited watts. And I like to describe the web access is giving us a 10 billion person audience, potentially.
Yes.
Potentially,
yes.
If you're on the planet, you can get to the internet. You're part of our audience, right?
There you go.
Let's do a quick on this day, and then we have a guest coming up in just a minute. We have Jack McDonald, who is the new athletic director at University of New England. Taped that interview yesterday. What an interesting man.
Very.
And it sounds like he's got some really exciting plans at UNE.
Mm-hmm.
On this day, Saturday, August 29th, Hurricane Katrina hits the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
What, boy, do we want to talk about climate change here? Is this a good time to jump in?
No.
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 Because if our longtime listeners know, Deb doesn't believe in that. I don't believe in the tooth fairy, and we agree to kind of go our separate ways.
What, there's no tooth fairy? Come on.
Yeah. Anyhow, that was the 10-year anniversary, and then also on this day, Michael Jackson would have been 57, I believe, on this day. He passed away in 2009. Oh, wow.
You danced to it, too. You know you did.
That may be the first time in WLOB history that Thriller was ever played. Typically, it's Lawrence Welk. Typically, it's...
You haven't heard my morning bumps.
No, you do Thriller? Anyhow, we had Jack McDonald in, and he's a very busy man. He just started a few months ago. As we got talking, it was... I didn't want to stop.
Right.
He's like this fascinating guy who's been athletic director all around the country. He's done some really interesting things. It feels like it's a great fit at UNE. So let's get to that interview. And appreciate people listening. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk, News Talk WLOB. Here's our interview with the new athletic director at UNE, Jack McDonald. Good morning. You're back. This is Tad Smart Talk with Steve-O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. Please join me in welcoming our special guest, Jack McDonald. Morning, Jack.
Morning. Thank you for having us.
You bet. It's great having you here. Jack is the newly appointed Associate VP and Director of Athletics at University of New England down here in Southern Maine. And it's great to have you on board. We want to cover all the exciting things happening at UNE. But the format of the show is really to get to know kind of the newsmakers and the policymakers and the academic and athletic leaders of the state. So why don't we start a little bit on where you grew up, where you went to school, and how you first got involved with athletics. I know you've had an illustrious career, and then we'll lead into talking about what's happening at UNE.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I'm a native of Braintree, Massachusetts, and very proud of the fact that I'm the oldest of 11 children.
You ever go to that drive-in on 128? There was a drive-in in Braintree.
Yeah, it's now the shuttle for the Logan Airport.
Yeah, they do like the
It was a twin drive-in, I think.
It was twin. I grew up in Needham. My grandparents were in Quincy, and so we would go down all the time. And they had these metal sound boxes you'd put on the window that would chip the window. And then you'd have bad popcorn and watch movies at the drive-in.
And we used to go sneak into the Blue Hill Cemetery and then walk down onto the into the movie theater and sit there with our chairs and
I never played that course.
Adult beverages. So I know it well.
Fantastic. So you grew up at Braintree, and then how did that lead into? I know you had a great career as an athlete at BC.
Well, I was both my parents are from South Boston, so we're shall we say, a good or bad Irish Catholic family, I'm not sure. And I enrolled at Archbishop Williams in Braintree, a local parochial school. And my dad was a very successful football player who passed away when I was a freshman in high school. And so he encouraged me to go out for football as a freshman in high school, and I got cut. And then I went out for basketball in the wintertime as a freshman, and I got cut. And I went out for baseball in the springtime, and I got cut. And so... And sort of in honor of my dad, I wanted to be an athlete, so I went off a track because they don't cut people. You could just make the team.
Fantastic.
Well, 3 years later, I was fortunate to get a scholarship to Boston College and and away we go. So,
what was your event in cross country and track and field?
I was a miler per se. I really didn't like the distance running. I remember the coach would tell us to go run 7 miles on Monday, and my friends would have my ice skates and stick, and I'd go down to the local lake and we'd play hockey, and then I'd run back to the gym and say, "Coach, I ran 7 miles." I'd be all sweaty, but little did he know I
had a similar. I grew up on the Charles River in Needham, and we used to play stick hockey on the Charles River and pond hockey.
Yes.
And I was with Bobby Orr a couple of years ago. We were flying somewhere, and I grew up idolizing Bobby Orr, right? Every kid in Boston had. And we were talking, and he goes, "Well, do you ever play hockey, Steve?" And I go, "I play a little bit, but there was one thing. I couldn't skate backwards." And Bobby Orr doesn't have much of a sense of humor, and he was very serious, like the greatest defenseman ever.
Oh my God.
So he's like, yeah, skating backwards is important. So yeah. That was my hockey.
My favorite number now. Every time I play a game, the number four is the first one I always play when I go to a track or a casino. The number four will ever be, for me, my
That's
favorite
funny.
Number.
Do you remember Dave Cowens
with
the Celtics? Yeah. Big Red?
Yep.
He lives about 10 miles from here.
Does he really?
And he and I have become friends, and we're business associates. We've invested in some commercial property here. And I grew up, with, I don't want to say the rats of Boston Garden, but the old Boston Garden had rats that were as big as cats. And when you went up the ramps before the game, the rats would be racing you up to the game. But Boston Garden was classic, and I grew up watching, Yastrzemski and Larry Bird, Bobby Orr, Derek Sanderson, all those guys.
No, we're all both the same age.
Isn't that
I know them all.
And then a few years
ago, we're so fortunate.
A few years ago, a friend of mine up here said, "Hey, I want to bring somebody by that you may know, Dave Cowens." And he was trying to explain to me about Dave Cowens. I go, "Please don't insult me by explaining Dave Cowens. I grew up following Dave Cowens, and he was one of the kind of my interests in basketball. And later on, I became an NBA sports agent. I represented a bunch of NBA players, Major League Baseball. And then a few years ago, I was lucky enough to be an investor, and I'm now one of the co-owners of the Celtics affiliate up here. And so I'm involved with basketball. But Dave, he walked in 3 years ago, and every few months we get together, we talk on the phone. One of the nicest guys in the whole world.
Dave and I share the same hobby. I was a cab driver. Dave was a cab driver. So
There's a great mythology for anyone Googling Dave Cowens. One day, him and a buddy, jumped in a cab. Yeah, we'll have to get Dave to come down to UNE and say hi.
That would be awesome. We're putting on a little, down the road we'll talk, with a little series of sports forums there.
Right. And so, but back to the Boston College, and your thing was the mile. What's your best time in the mile?
Well, I got very, very lucky in 1976, which should be 40 years ago, I think, this January. I was trying to run a 409 mile to qualify for the national championships. And I was always, because the coach had me run three or four events, I always was a guy that would sit behind and then try to kick by at the last lap. And so I said, this time I got to take this out and I got to run 409. So I'm going to take it and lead it myself. And went around the first 400, 440, and it was 60 seconds. And the half mile was 2 minutes. And the three-quarter mile was, 3 minutes.
Oh, boy.
I says, whoa. And the crowd was starting to go crazy.
Sub four?
Well, and then a guy from Georgetown, Jim Peterson, passed me with a lap to go.
Yeah.
So, and then we finished together. He edged me out. And then back in those days, they had the mimeograph paper. They would type in the results, and they'd say, first place, Jim Peterson, Georgetown. And in those days, you could lose to a person but have the same time. This was before electronic timing.
And they the increments changed. It used to be 1/10 of a second, 1,000th, and now with technology, it's 1/10,000.
So they announced him as the winner of the mile was at the Dartmouth Relays was Jim Peterson, Georgetown, 400.9.
Whoa.
So I said, and I knew in those days you could get the same time as somebody. I said, wouldn't it be nice if I had the same time? And 400.9 sounds a lot better than 401.
Right.
So I went back and I'm looking over the lady typing on the mimeograph paper and, four, she types, then she types O, and then she types the second O, and I said, it was like I won the race. But so anyway, my best was 400.9, and I say all the time, some of the best of athletic achievements are nothing more than mistakes, because how can you practice something you've never done before?
Right.
So I got very, very lucky, and like all athletes, whether it be Bob Beamon's long jump or those kinds of
Bannister breaking
the 4 minute mile, or somebody hitting four home runs in a game. I got lucky, and I think that's why we love sports as much as we do, is you just You just never know what's going to happen.
Wow. We have Jack McDonald here. He's director of athletics at University of New England, just coming in from formerly being director of athletics at Quinnipiac University and then at University of Denver and then assistant director of athletics at Boston College. So after your experience as a student and a student athlete and I see here in 1982 you were inducted into the Boston College Hall of Fame for sports. That's excellent. My brother went to BC for a while, and growing up in Boston,
okay,
very familiar. What a great school. They still do great.
It really is a very special place. And I tell people all the time, I've been away from graduating from BC a long time ago, but I tell people whenever I'm on the Mass Pike, I go two places, my mother's house in BC.
Yeah.
So it's even to this day. It's a very special place. I probably talk to someone from BC at least once a week. And
you and I talked earlier. I was fortunate enough early in my career. I worked with Coca-Cola New England. I worked with a bunch of people there. But Doug Flutie, who is still to this day, 3 decades later, is still famous for the pass.
Mm.
You know, Flutie to Gerard Phelan, and it's still the pass. And Flutie's such a nice guy. I had a chance to meet him, and I'm sure you've crossed paths with him.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to see him in the hallway all the time. When I was coaching, the track office was right there before you walk into the football locker room, and Jack McNeil and Doug Flutie and all those great people. So we were there, and I was holding my second son, Jimmy, was born in October 84, and I had him in my arms on November of, and he was screaming because he didn't know what the heck was going on. I was screaming.
Was it against University of Miami? Was that the game?
Yep.
And
yes,
it was just a Hail Mary.
It was just the last possession.
Yep. It was like a jump ball where there were like 8 guys in the end zone, 4 BC, 4 Hurricane guys, and it just kind of plopped into Gerard Phelan's hands. And then the legend.
And again, as I said earlier, that's why we love sports. You just never know what can happen in any particular ball game. You just or a track meet. You just don't know.
So after your experience at BC, you went on to earn a master's degree in physical education at Springfield College. What was it at that point that made you or was the opportunity that allowed you to transition from your academic and student athlete experience into working in sports and progressing in your career?
Well, I think after I graduated from Boston College in 73, we started a track club called the Greater Boston Track Club. I started that when I graduated, because I wanted to have some fellow runners. We hosted a track meet. There was a Harvard, Yale, and Oxford, Cambridge annually. Every 2 years would have a track meet at either Harvard or Yale. Well, one summer it was due to be at Harvard in the football stadium on a dirt track. Well,
the Coliseum, the very famous, very beautiful stadium.
Classic stadium. Well, they had it, and it was a pouring rain. It was a downpour, so the cinder track was just a big pile of mud. I was happening to cleaning locker rooms for the athletic director, Bill Flynn. Harvard athletic director called over to Boston College and said, listen, we just had a track meet last night. It was a big pile of mud. Boston College had the only all-weather track in New England at the time. He says, do you think you could put together a meet for Friday night? Well, this is now Wednesday morning.
Wow.
So Bill Flynn called me up, and he says, Jack, listen, do you think you can pull together a track meet for the Oxford-Cambridge team to have a meet on a decent track? And I said, sure. And he said, when is it? He says, 2 days. So we pulled together this track meet with the local Greater Boston Stars or runners versus the Oxford-Cambridge, and we had a blast. It was a great meet, good times. We had a good social time afterwards. And I think the following day, we says, we got to keep this going. So we started the Greater Boston Track Club, which went on to be pretty much world-renowned with the likes of, you know, Bill Rogers and Al Salazar and Randy Thomas. And when I had run my good mile at Dartmouth, I was a member of the club at the time. And that's so without the Greater Boston Track Club. In addition to that, we had a great coach named Bill Squires. And he kept telling me, he was the coach. He wrote the workouts. But I call myself the managing director, where I sent in the entry fees, collected the dues, ordered the buses, get the hotels. And my coach, Bill Squires, well, I'll never forget, Jack, you need to go back to graduate school. You have an inkling for something that could be good. So he encouraged me to go to Springfield College, and I applied to be a dorm director. And my wife and I got married in July of 77 and moved into the Lakeside Hall at Springfield in August. And I had 150 guys when the drinking age was 18, so we had a lot of fun.
I remember that. I grew up in, as I said before. And I look back and I go, well, what were they thinking with the drinking age 18? Because that meant kids who were 16 could borrow licenses. It was There were places in Boston called Father's First, yep. Father's Second, Father's.
Please,
and don't they
tell
were
me.
All like nickel pitcher beer.
No.
And it was nothing good ever happened
no.
there.
No.
And then there was a place in Kenmore Square, Mary Malou's or Molly's or something. And yeah, I think we probably bumped right. into each other.
Yeah, we probably did.
Oh, speaking of track, we have, by the way, we have Jack McDonald here. He's the new director of athletics at University of New England here outside of Portland. You know, Joan Benoit lives right up the street. Have you ever crossed paths in the track?
Very much. In fact, I want to see her. I want to have her invited to the University of New England. But Joni was the, you know, when I was graduate school at Springfield, she right. was still running at Bowdoin, and she ran every race she ran up at Springfield College that year. I got to say hello to her. I was graduate assistant coach at Springfield wow. at the time. And then Joni went on after a great career as a runner. You know, we were all there in, I think, 1983 when she ran 2:22. And but then she became the head women's coach at Boston University. And at the end of the season, the Boston College BU would probably have 20 or so runners that would compete in the local ECAC championships.
Right.
So Joni and I would share buses. We literally each paid half of the bus, and her and I would sit in the bus together and talk.
Isn't she the best?
Oh, my God. What an awesome woman.
And she lives 8 miles from here. And again, Dave Cowens lives 10 miles that way. Joni lives, and she's been on the show a couple of times, and she's so inspirational. And I bumped into her like a year ago in London or Paris at the airport, because she flies everywhere. Sometimes she still runs, but she's such a goodwill ambassador.
She really is. She's a great ambassador, not only for just women's sports, for men's yeah. sports, or just and for the state of Maine.
And she's getting involved with some environmental issues and community issues, so she's not just the singular focus. She's
and I saw something in the Portland paper this last couple of weeks of how she stays at the finish line until everybody's done, and she either shakes the hands or congratulates them for
Beach to Beacon,
for
right?
Beach to Beacon, which she started many years ago. So I follow her career closely, and I'm honored to be a friend of hers.
Right. And so we're still only like touching upon your career. We're going to get to UNE. One other question. This is an indulgent question on my part because it's one of my favorite movies, Prefontaine. Mm. You must have watched it, right? And being involved with track, you know, the legend of Prefontaine. And what was that the name of the – that's not the name of the
movie. Pre?
It was Pre.
I think it was
– and it was with Donald Sutherland in the movie – was just so epic. And after watching that movie, he was famously
he was a maverick too. He lived Oregon, life on right? the edge, and but he was a phenomenal runner. And it wasn't for Lasse Varin and what his tremendous performance at the 5000 in Munich. You know, I mean, Steve would have.
But that was still considered a great. And that's the amazing thing about track. He didn't win, but it's considered one of his greatest races ever, based on the strategy and based on the kick and based on the heart.
Yeah. He was really – I think he was class of 73 at Oregon, just like I was 73 at Boston College. And I remember in one of my hippie days, we all drove across country in 1971, and we went to the University of Oregon campus, which for me was like visiting the cathedral. It's like going to the Vatican for track and field. You know, it was
– And Bowerman was considered a legend, right?
Yep.
And,
yep.
And for people that don't know some of the mythology, but the proximity to what ultimately became Nike.
Exactly.
Bowerman, because he ran such a great track program, he was part of kind of the early development.
It was called Blue Ribbon Sports before it was called Nike.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he made the shoes with a waffle iron.
Yeah, and also, yeah, I forget the name of the person, but in my business of advertising and marketing, it's also legendary that there was a woman in a design shop somewhere in Oregon where for like $40 she designed the Nike swoosh. Mm. And that became one of the most iconic, indelible yep. images in the entire world.
Yep.
I don't know how factual the movie was, and I don't think it was a very popular. It wasn't like, you know, Chariots.
It wasn't an Oscar winner, but
it wasn't an Oscar winner, but it was something about the heart.
I think for those of us in the sport, that's a movie we encourage our children and grandchildren to watch.
Well, I encourage our millions of listeners. Deb, have you seen that? Do you know who Prefontaine is?
No, I don't. But I'm going to get the movie now.
You've got to get the movie.
Yeah.
And tragically, you know, he had a great collegiate career at Oregon, and then he had a great career in the Olympics. There was the issue in Munich, which was the horrific mm-hmm. issue that happened there. And then tragically, he died in a car accident when he was getting back into competitive running. And that added to the mythology, but it was just what a career and what an inspiration.
And then, going back to the mile, Lasse Varin ran a 4-minute last mile. in the 5,000 meters. So he ended the race in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just, so how do you beat that?
Let me ask you one question again. We could make this a 5-hour show, but I've always thought that track was one of the purest forms of athletics. Mm-hmm. I've been involved in hockey, basketball, and track is, there's a little bit of technology in terms of shoes, in terms of over the last 50 years, shoe design has become lighter and more efficient, and there's been a little bit of advancement in nutrition, which affects the body. Mm-hmm. There's been training advancement. But at some point, you know, famously when Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, was that in the 50s?
Or I don't even 56, I think.
56. Yeah. The funny thing about track and field is, unlike other sports where records keep growing, it feels like there's a physiological barrier that the human body, the muscles, the skeleton, can only go so fast once we've got the nutrition down, once we get the equipment down. And what's the current mile record?
342.
243, yeah. Are we at the point where, obviously there's been huge changes in the last 20 years, but are we at the point where many track records will only be broken in like 1,000th increments, or do you see it leveling out where human beings just can't physically run any faster?
They'll get better. I think they're getting to see it. We're very close to a sub-2-hour marathon, and talking about Joni for men.
Right.
So that's getting close. And so it's physiologically, everybody's getting better. Just they're getting better.
But human evolution's gone on for millions of years.
Right.
So the skeleton, everything's evolved. And in the last few decades, these external factors have gotten better. Hmm. But we're still not going to physically evolve for hundreds of thousands of years to go faster. But where do you think the biggest area of new records or new breakthroughs
are
happening?
Probably just because the distance running, it's a longer 2-hour marathon or you know, a 1-hour half marathon. So in those races, you're going to see some big changes. The sprints are going to, unless they start measuring in thousands of the seconds, we're not going to see the record spring break that much.
I think they probably will.
Because
people like records, right?
It
adds pizzazz. It's a PR thing. We have a new record. And I don't know if people care if it's 1,000th of a second or 1/10,000th. The idea is somebody did something faster.
And as we went to talking about the University of New England, people ask me all the time, what does it take to be an athletic director? And
right.
I joke and I say to them all the time, you need to be a men's and women's track and field coach because you manage men and women,
right,
big and small, black and white, tall and short, and there's an event. I told my sons, like me, I got cut from all sports, and I would tell my boys, and I tell everybody, go out for track. There's a sport for you no matter what your ability is.
Yeah.
And in me as an administrator, I then need to manage at Boston College over 100 athletes, and then you need to know how to delegate. You know, you can't say that you're a good hammer throw coach at the same time you're saying you're a good sprint coach. You just can't be the both. You need to be able to delegate and trust your assistant coaches. So my success, if I've had any, as an administrator, is because of my experience as a men's and women's track and field coach.
So you weren't demonstrating the Frosby flop? Is that your pronouncement?
No.
Deb, are you any good at that?
I don't even know what it is.
Oh, come on. Don't play dumb with us. You know, Jack and I are a couple old track and field guys.
Right. Now, I have no idea.
Isn't
that
the guy who came up with the very first technique for the high bar?
1968 Olympics. Yep.
Boy, you know dates really well.
It's going over backwards.
Yeah, and before then, everyone just kind of went over one way, and it was this whole new physical thing.
And that Frosby flop could not have happened if they didn't have the rubber-padded high jump pits. Those days, they used to land in sand.
Right.
So you had to land with your leg to hit the ground first and not your back.
Yeah, you would have been breaking your back.
Right, he could have never done it if it wasn't for the rubber pits.
Huh.
And he's got the perfect name for it.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
Again, if his name was Smith, it would be like the Smith technique.
Right.
But the Frosby front, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Boy, we've got Jack McDonald here, Director of Athletics, University of New England. You're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. Okay, so you've got, after Boston College, 1990, you get the call, Director of Athletics, University of Denver. What was the impetus to go west, young man, where you grew up in New England, you went to the Braintree Drive-In, and then all of a sudden, here you have Denver, Mile High. What was that opportunity?
Well, I think anybody, as we start our career, I don't think anybody likes the word assistant in front of their title,
right,
whether it be assistant coach or assistant athletic director. So there was an opportunity at the University of Denver, and to be an athletic director. They had a tremendous hockey program, which I learned a little bit about at BC as an administrator. And, of course, they got the Mile High Air, which us runners like to train in. So so we dipped my toe into being an athletic director and at the University of Denver, and it was drop-dead gorgeous to live out there.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And but the problem was, being from one of 11 and, you know, 30 or 40 grandchildren, I was looking east the whole time I was out in Denver. And so Quinnipiac was looking, and at Denver we elevated the entire athletic program from Division II to Division I, and then Quinnipiac was looking for an athletic director, and
that was in the direction of moving east.
Yes, it was. And not quite back to Boston, but
when you said you elevated, that wasn't a pun based on the elevation out of Denver, was it?
No, that was a good pickup.
It was
very good.
You know, when you're baking,
that's
in Denver,
why you're famous, Steve.
Oh, that's very famous. Deb knows me.
That's why.
Sully knows me. my wife, my kids. But you know, when you're baking in Denver, you've got to use a higher temperature, you know, because you ever read that in the cake boxes?
I always
thought that was fascinating because I always used to like to bake. You wouldn't think it, but I'm a baker. And it always says, at high altitudes, make sure that you bake for an extra 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it always seemed funny, like in high altitudes, wouldn't those people know? Like, why do people in Boston or Maine need that instruction? Because we're here, right? And if you're in Denver, it seems like the real estate people give you a little note when you move there saying, make sure it doesn't feel like it should be on every cake box.
I agree.
I don't know. Another little thing that bugs me. So, oh, by the way, Denver did well this year in lacrosse, right?
Yes. Yes.
Champions? After like 20-something years of being dominated in the East, lacrosse, right, which is my son, my daughter has played lacrosse.
I have a son that plays lacrosse. It's a great sport. He learned out in Colorado as well.
Which is funny because I in Needham, Brine, which was one of the first manufacturers of lacrosse heads, I remember as a kid going there and stringing lacrosse heads for like 50 cents a head. And then it was dominated in the East, and Duke and North Carolina, I think, had really good. And Maryland has a good team. And for the first time in 20-something years or forever in D1, a school outside of or to the west of the Mississippi won the championship. And
it's like Tampa Bay winning the Stanley Cup. It's just very similar, you know. The hockey's very regional, as is lacrosse. So it's nice to see.
I'll have to tell you my Phil Esposito, Tony Esposito story from 25 years ago in Tampa. Both great guys, great hockey players, but they interesting leaders of that NHL franchise.
Yeah.
We have Jack McDonald here. He's director of athletics at University of New England, also associate VP. Let's accelerate to the present, because after Denver, you went to Quinnipiac and University. Where is that located?
It's in Hamden, Connecticut, which is just like 6 miles north of New Haven.
Got it.
It's right, literally, the Yale University is right down the street.
So for 10 years, you were there, the head of athletics.
20 years.
20 years. Yeah. 95 to 2015.
Yep.
And then this year, you get the call from University of New England. And how did that come about? And tell us a little bit about what your first experiences have been now coming to Maine. I'm sure in your travels, and both in athletics and personal travels, you've been to Maine. But what was that like, the decision to come here to Maine and then join University of New England?
Well, in October of last year, I announced my retirement from Quinnipiac University. And I said, well, okay, I'll hang up my spikes and just move on and find something else to do. I was planning actually to get my license to be a truck driver.
Again, it's almost like we've had parallel lives. I got my CDL license a few years ago.
You did?
Because I wanted to be a truck driver.
We have to talk.
We have to talk. And as it turns out, I own a trucking company and a DOT operator. So not only do I have my license, but I have a bunch of vehicles. So if you want to drive one of our
I'm
trucks.
I'm going to check my vacation time and come up and see you.
Yeah, and all you have to do, give me a little basketball time on the court, the beautiful courts down at UNA, and I'll let you drive some of the.
I'm ready.
Really?
I'm ready. Oh, yeah. My bucket list was always a cab driver, a bartender, and a long-distance truck driver. So if you'll take me, I'll work weekends.
Can I tell you what's even more fun than truck driving? Big Prevost tour buses.
Really?
Yeah. About 4 years ago, after I got my CDL license, a friend of mine owns a big bus company down in Nashville, and all the country acts, Tim McGraw and Kenny Chesney, they have like hundreds of these tour buses with beds and satellites and kitchens. And I went down there and I said, hey, can I rent one of Tim McGraw's tour bus? You know, when they're not touring, they lease them out, right? So he leased it to me, and it's this big, giant Prevost bus, and it had 8 bunks and satellites. I drove it from there up here, picked up my wife and kids, and we went on a 2-week family vacation down the East Coast to Nashville, to Atlanta, where they were born, then down to Marco Island, Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the best vacations ever. So you get the feeling of a truck, but you're traveling with a house behind you. Right. You go to sleep with.
There's no place better to travel and to be with family, people you love the most, than be in a car or a truck.
Yeah.
Because you're isolated. You're together. You're on the same schedule.
You're singing songs. You're visiting Waffle Houses.
No offense to all the other vacations. The best place to be with a family is in your car.
Well, you're feeling the places you're driving through as opposed to just flying over them.
And you're together. Yeah. And you're on the same schedule. So anyway.
We'll get you in a Prevost bus. That's what you need.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Fantastic.
Please don't tell the folks at University of New England.
I won't, because they just hired you, and they're excited about great things happening. So you announced your retirement.
So I was at the NCAA convention last January at Washington, D.C., and I see a press release come across that University of New England is going to add football and women's rugby. Well, at the time, I was involved. I still am heavily sort of the director or the commissioner, still a volunteer. So I actually made contact to the University of New England about women's rugby. Come on, welcome aboard. We have an association. And long and short of it, I made contact with President Ripich, and she said, get up here, we want to talk to you.
Wow.
So over the next few months, we were really talking about rugby, and then come close to my retirement time in June 30, I was getting nervous about having nothing to do. I didn't have my CDL license yet.
Oh, boy.
So they made an inquiry, I expressed interest, and here we are.
Had you spent much time in Maine before?
Yes. Well, obviously recruiting all the great athletes from Maine, all the great towns. I've been up in pretty much the whole state. I have brothers who had no longer, but he had a place in New Sharon. I had a brother in Waterboro, another one up in Lincolnville. But Maine is in Boston and Maine, you know, it is a true vacation land. There's no question.
In some ways, Maine could be the suburb of Boston.
Yeah, I think it might be. I see a lot of mass plates up here.
Well, not just in vacation, but I think, you know, this is another discussion having to do with economic development. You know, there's proximity between Massachusetts and Maine, and Maine is a relatively weak economic engine because our industries are tourism and seafood, you know, and sports can play a big role. We've got Jack McDonald. You listen to Tide Smart Talk with Steve O, News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM. So when did you start at UNE? When did you officially report for duty?
June 1st, I started. I was sort of finishing up at Quinnipiac and starting at University of New England. And it's been, every day goes by, it's just like it gets better and better. I was running on Fortune Rocks Beach this morning at 6 o'clock, and the sun was coming up, and the waves were banging. And
that's great.
Oh, my God. And not to mention the beautiful, beautiful campus to you know, half the students there have an ocean view from their dormitories.
And there's some great athletic facilities down there.
Leadership, academic programs. You know, I was a little embarrassed. I didn't know how nice it was and how strong it was academically and with 3 campuses. And so it's even after 3 months now, I can't wait to go to work every day.
And I've had the president, Daniel Ripich, up here a couple times. Great energy, dynamic. And
you're only as good as your boss.
Yeah, and she's doing a great job. And they're also, relative to academic programs, they've done some very thoughtful, kind of strategic expansion of programming into the School of Dentists in terms of pharmacy. And they're doing some, you know, that's where a lot of future healthcare jobs will be.
You know, I don't know if I get the right word, but applied majors, when you get 4 or 5 years of an education, you go right into nursing, right into dental, right into pharmacy.
Yeah.
You know,
there's nothing wrong with French Lit. You know, I interview a lot of people that come in here and they have a degree in French Lit. And if, of course, we were a place that made French baguettes, French Lit may be very it. But, you know, the reality is if you're looking for a job, typically having, you know, liberal arts is great for context and critical thinking and perspective.
Well, moving on to grad school.
But ultimately it comes down to communication skills, understanding critical thinking and process. So for UNE, I've printed out the homepage. And so UNE is Division III, right?
Yes.
And part of... the conference is at the ECAC, Eastern College Athletic Conference.
Yes.
And again, I couldn't believe it when I read this, but women's rugby coming in the next couple of years.
Next September, we're starting our varsity season. We're going to open the year with Dartmouth College, and you're the first member of the media to know that. We just landed that last week.
Wow.
So we'll have Dartmouth visiting campus next September.
They're not a bad school.
I've heard of them.
They
also have a pretty good track facility that I've been at a few times.
Yeah, they do. And then football, 2 years from now?
2017, we're going to start with a sub-varsity JV program because we don't want to have a bunch of freshmen getting banged around by the season program. But then I just landed an agreement this week where we're going to start our 2018 and 2019 football season with the Coast Guard Academy, which is, you know, a very prestigious academic and military institution. So things are moving pretty good.
What was the thinking, and I think these decisions were probably made before you came on board, but talk a little bit about as the former leader at two different universities, and you worked at BC for a while, what was the thinking for the athletic department to add? Was it based on demand? Was it based on a number of women student athletes saying we really want to play rugby and be more competitive? Or do you add athletic programs hoping to attract new student athletes that have that interest? So is it supply or demand that drives it?
I think the bottom line is sports in our society is huge. I mean, it's sometimes the biggest section of a newspaper. It's 10 or 15 minutes on the news broadcast every night.
Right.
And now that you have women involved, you have lifetime activities like triathlon and, you know, all sorts of activities. I see the kayaks almost in every other car. People are staying very active. So sports and recreation are a big, big deal. And students who come to college want to participate outside the classroom. You know, when they're done with class and lab, they want to go out and get a good workout in. So that's where football and rugby fit in. Rugby has been around. It's probably one of the world's longest and oldest sports.
And one of the toughest.
Very tough. We've had women's varsity rugby at Quinnipiac, but it's also a great, great event to watch.
And,
you know, you talk about lacrosse or ice hockey. So it's a great, great sport. And then obviously football has tremendous tradition. It not only gives the athletes a great experience, but it brings in the public. That Saturday afternoon pregame tailgate, the beautiful fall foliage. It sort of brings everybody together that really no other sport can do that.
Interesting. And a couple of years ago, a friend of mine became the head of USA Women's Hockey. Her name's Reagan Carey. I don't know if...
I know Reagan really well. They were just here at our campus in July.
I know. Yeah. And so Reagan, up until Reagan, I think she joined about 4 years ago out in Colorado, USA Hockey. I know her dad, and great background in terms of sports. I had never been to a women's hockey game. And a couple of years ago, over Vermont, they had world championships. Mm. And women's hockey is great. I thought it would be like slower, and obviously there are different rules.
I'm not sure. I should say this, but the only difference between men and women's hockey now in terms of the level is the pigtails out the back of the helmet.
Yeah.
Because it's great hockey.
Oh, it's unbelievable. There's incidental contact if you're going into the corner, so the checking is different. Mm. But the skill and the speed.
Right.
And the
interest level sky high.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's sky high. Quinnipiac, we hosted the NCAA Frozen Four at Quinnipiac 2 years ago.
Yeah, Hillary Knight, who spent a lot of time in Maine. In fact, we worked with her for a little bit here. She's been in the studio. Great athlete, great role model.
It's a great, great sport, and it's growing fastly. In fact, we're hoping that the Reagan and USA Hockey comes back to UNE next summer.
Yeah, well, her family lives 11 miles that way.
Boy, oh boy.
So you're at the epicenter,
Jack. We're going to have to get in our truck and go for a ride and see all these fans of yours.
I'm lucky to know them. I don't know if they're fans of mine. I think I'm fans of theirs. I think they would probably go, Steve-O? Steve-O who?
Yeah.
By the way, you're listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. You know, we've talked about women's athletics, which is something that, as a husband and as a father of two girls who have played sports, I think Title IX is one of the greatest pieces of legislation. And it not only opened up, and it wasn't specific to sports, it had to do with funding and public institutions having, you know, equal opportunity. But I think it's made such a difference in the world, not just for universities that are public universities that get public funding, not just giving young women an opportunity to play different sports, but what that's led into leadership and what's that meant for, you know, everyone being able to pursue whether their interest in athletics or vocational interest later on. You're probably aware of this, but it was the last piece of legislation, I believe, that Richard Nixon signed before he ran off in his helicopter to San Clemente when he was impeached.
Right.
And it was one of the best.
Right.
What does Title IX mean to you as an athletic director for many, many years at different universities?
I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for Title IX, because my first full-time job in intercollegiate athletics was to be the men's and women's track and field coach at Boston College. And before that, it was a part-time men's position. I said to the athletic director, I need a full-time job and you need a full-time coach for both men and women. So they agreed to hire me as both men's and women's track and field coach.
Wow.
And without that hire in July of 1977 or 78, I wouldn't be sitting here today. So I think Title IX has helped not only all the great women who have been young women who have participating in sport, but it's doubled our facilities. It's doubled our everything about intercollegiate athletics and high school athletics is benefited by Title IX.
There's been some argument, particularly more by D1 schools. Yeah, there's some pushback, I think, because football typically has many more scholarships. It represents greater revenue for big schools. And explain a little bit for our audience that may be vaguely familiar with Title IX, what that means within an athletic department in terms of needing to offer the same number of scholarships, the same number of sports, or same number of access.
It's all about
for boys
percentage.
And men and women?
If a university is 55% women enrollment, then the athletic participation should be 55%. And it doesn't need to be even, you know, football and, I mean, ice hockey, the same number of people, the same budgets. When you add up your numbers of athletes and the dollars spent on men and women, they need to be proportional to your enrollment. It's probably the simplest way. So if you're a university that, like the military academies, might be 75% men, then they're only required, they have to be 25% of their budget needs to be for women. Or if you have a university, somewhere like University of New England, where we are heavy in the sciences and in the nursing and medical school, we're a little bit, majority of our students are women. We need to have the majority of our athletic department women. So that's pretty much the guideline. We have to fill out a federal report, which we're undergoing now, every October, to tell the federal government and the Department of Education. It's sort of like our tax return. We need to tell them exactly
kind of your compliance,
how many are participating and where the money's going.
In the case of UNE, which is Division III, there's no issue of scholarship, right? Because many people think of college athletics, where everyone in college, different sports, because you hear about big school scholarships. Talk a little bit about the distinction between D1, D2, and in the case of UNE, which is more accessible to a broader range of athletics, but it's not necessarily the highest level of D1.
Division I and Division II both give scholarships. Division I is allowed to give more. Let's say in basketball, they can give 13 scholarships in Division I. In Division II, you give 10. But those are awarded basically solely on athletic ability. And obviously, you need to be accepted. Your academics have to be. But Division III, all of the financial aid is awarded solely on your financial need. And frankly, for me, as having been Division I my whole career, it's really sort of wholesome and clean to be here and not deal with some of the good and bad of Division I. So,
yeah, you mentioned wholesome and clean, which I think is important. And I'm looking at the UNE mission statement and core values, and the 8 listed core values, which I think are great and I support, are integrity, hard work, initiative, accountability, balance, entrepreneurial spirit, commitment, and pride. When you get to D1, which UNE isn't, money comes into it, scholarships come into it, media comes into it.
Media is a big part of it.
Boosters come into it, which is a big deal. And as much as every athletic director and major school program wants to be kind of clean and pure, there's so many pressures from every area, and there's obviously, you know, always discussion every year on academics, on how many kids graduate, how tutors are given to kids that may or may not be academically eligible. How does that, even though you just started at UNE and you've kind of come from D1, how do you think that feels differently in terms of a campus environment and a school environment not having those other pressures and having sports for people that just want to enjoy right. sports and play them competitively, but taking away all the junk that kind of makes it different.
Well, fortunately for me, I'm a track and field guy, so I look at sports from the bottom up and not the top down, so right. I can see it. But in many ways, UNE is the same as Harvard and Yale and Notre Dame and Boston College. It's a good school. You mentioned it earlier. The big difference is media. When there's a mistake made at a major Division I football school, whether it be, you know, an athlete, you know, had a fight or had too much to drink or got the speeding ticket or
right.
Domestic violence or whatever it might be, you only read about the Division I athletes. Those things occur everywhere in society, but you only see it in the NFL or in
right.
major Division I, but they occur everywhere. So in some ways, that's the big difference in Division I is the media really latches on to the success. Sometimes we get too much acclaim when we do well and too much criticism when we do poorly. So, but in Division III, we have issues, and we have issues. They're human beings and they're young people, and it's sure. our job to educate them. But those things occur, but the mistakes aren't quite as publicized as they are in Division I.
Talk a little bit about the issues of D1, and particularly I'm most probably connected to basketball. So Kentucky, John Calipari. Phenomenally successful in the last few years. This last NBA draft, 4 of 13 players in the first round. He recruits typically an incredibly strong freshman class. These are kids who are identified that if it wasn't for the restrictions in the NBA now in terms of the draft, would probably be eligible, or some of them would be, to play. But he makes no pretense that he's recruiting kids to have this great education at Kentucky. It's to play for Kentucky, and they've won championships. They do well. They get drafted. What do you think, as a high-level D1 administrator, and you've worked with the NCAA and different, you've been on committees for the ice hockey committee, so you've worked with the NCAA in senior capacity, working with the universities you've been part of. What do you think big-time athletics needs to do to either get back to athletics, or do you think that the money and the visibility creates a greater good because it funds programs, or do you think it's gotten out of hand, the money in big-time athletics?
Well, first off, the NCAA has done a phenomenal job graduating and retaining student-athletes at all three divisions. We only read about the mistakes and the great success stories, but you know, there's that thing on the news, the ads on the TV. You know, we've got 300,000 student athletes every year who are going pro in something other than sports. And I think that's a great statement. And, you know, meanwhile, you might have, you know, a couple of one and dones at Kentucky or Duke or whatever. But that's only, you know, barely, not even a percent of the total NCAA. So, you know, I'm here because I had my education from Boston College, and all the people at University of New England are going to get their education. So basically, the NCAA does a great, great job in educating all the student athletes because of the rules to get into the school, the rules to stay eligible each semester, and the rules to stay eligible from year to year. No one knows all that. That's all happening behind the scenes. And now in terms of the Division I, you know, giving the guys stipend or
right.
forming a union for football, you know, some of that stuff's probably going to happen. I hate to say it. I don't agree with it. But, you know, like you said, the evolvement of athletes, you know, people running a lot faster than they did 100 years ago. And society is changing, too. Look how much we've changed in the last 50 years in our society with all sorts of things. So
I mean, what you're talking about also, there's for listeners that may not be aware, there's all types of lawsuits and legal issues going on in the last couple of years with the NCAA. There's some lawsuits from some former student athletes. The deal is many of these larger D1 schools get tens of millions of dollars in TV rights. They get licensing rights. They get all kinds of hosts. And most student athletes are restricted by, you know, per diem or meals. And if they accept a ticket to a concert or something, they're in violation and their scholarship could be. And I think in general, the interest on that part of it is, if all these colleges are making hundreds of millions of dollars through the efforts of student athletes, shouldn't they get some of it? I personally think that it's a slippery slope, and I would prefer that they didn't.
I agree, and they are. What they don't see is how much, and this is at all levels, you know, they're getting meals when they're away on the weekend. They're getting uniforms and sweatsuits and shoes and warm-ups and hoods. And they get sometimes they get books. They get an instant
But it's an academic institution where athletics is an extracurricular thing. If we go to the slippery slope where college athletics becomes the thing and academics become subordinate, I think it hurts the whole institution.
Yeah, I really don't think academics in any school, particularly University of New England, becomes secondary. It's just it's made up to be that way.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, my alma mater, Boston College, is always in the top two or three, if not one, in graduation rate for major football schools.
Go Eagles.
So anyway, there are things that are going on. Unfortunately, they don't get publicized properly, and I think that's where we're. But in terms of the NCAA, generally, I'm totally supportive. Because they do pretty much guarantee if you're a parent paying major dollars for your student, male or female, to go to college, to be a student athlete, you got a coach, an athletic director, a sports information, an athletic training, a nutritionist, a strength and conditioning person, and a team doctor, all taking care of your son or daughter. And sometimes the people who are not in athletics don't have that.
I agree. Hey, in our last minute or so, we have Jack McDonald here. He's the Associate VP and Director of Athletics at University of New England. The website, if you're not familiar, is www.une.edu. They're doing some great things. And if you have a son or daughter or granddaughter, grandson that's looking at educational options, I am a big fan of UNE, not just in terms of their athletic programming, but their academics, what they're doing. But in the last minute or so, talk a little bit about you've been on board. You're the new athletic director, director of athletics. What can people look forward to this year in terms of athletics? You mentioned a couple of new programs in the next couple of years. But if people want to either get information, talk to the school about programming, go attend events, talk a little bit about, for listeners who may not be that familiar with UNE, and how they can be involved and kind of enjoy the athletic department.
Well, if you remember the Maine community, particularly Southern Maine, Portland community, you need to come and see the campus for a game. It's the premier family sporting attraction, I think, in Southern Maine, because if the price is right. And two brand new buildings in the Alphon Forum, which is basketball and hockey. So you bring your family. We have great college hockey. We have a new men's hockey coach, and we have a great women's hockey program. We have a very successful women's and men's basketball program.
And it's a beautiful facility.
It's a beautiful
facility.
You walk in, and the basketball's on your right, the hockey's on your left. It's just a tremendous
USA
place.
USA women's practice there, I think, last year, and I went for a couple
summer.
Of their practices.
Yeah, this summer. So from that perspective, as fans, you know, if you don't have the time or money to get into Portland for a big game, come on down to the University of New England. In addition to that, for the prospective students, you know, to come and make a visit, and you see that ocean and that Saco River.
Right.
You know what I mean? I tell people all the time, I says, is this your first visit to UNE? And they go, yes. I says, it won't be. You'll be back again.
That's great.
So I think make a visit, and I think seeing is believing, and that's why I'm here. I was very much attracted to the leadership, the academics, and the beautiful facility. So it's a tremendous, tremendous place that I think once you see it, you'll be back.
Well, it's great having you here in Maine. Great having you at UNE. Hope you come back on the show.
Oh, I'd love to. We got lots to talk about.
Oh, we only scratched the surface.
We have lots to talk about,
and we need to get you in a Prevost bus so you can tour around with your family. Right.
That and an 18-wheeler. I'm ready.
Okay. You'll have to go home and talk to Linda and say, hey, let's get Brian, Jim, Jack, and David and load them up in the bus.
And their girls and wives.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
All right.
We
are UNE. Thanks, Stevie.
Go UNE. You've been listening to Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O and News Talk WLOB 1310. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.